You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Something about this recent cold snap makes cooking up soups and stews at home seem especially appealing. But most recipes automatically call for stock. So the question is, how do you make a good stock? Well, we have asked Melissa Clark to stop by to answer that very question. Melissa writes the column A Good Appetite each Wednesday in the New York Times dining section. She's published more cookbooks than I can keep track of, including her latest, Cook This Now. And I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show. By the way, if you in our audience have any questions about how to make good stock or some of the other things related to that, please give us a call at 212-433-9692. Or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, great to see you.
You shared a couple of recipes for stocks, which we've put on our show page. What is it about making stocks that so many people find intimidating?
You know, I think that it's the long list of ingredients that you think you have to go out and buy. You think, oh, okay, well, I have to go buy a chicken, and then I have to go buy celery, and I have to buy carrots, and I have to have all these herbs and spices. And by the time I've done that, then I have to simmer it for 4 hours. It seems very labor intensive. But a good stock doesn't need any of that. You can make a good stock from probably whatever little odds and ends you have in your refrigerator right now. The purpose of stock is to prolong the life of – to extend – the use of whatever you have. You can use vegetable peelings. You can use a chicken carcass that you've already, you know, you've roasted a chicken and you have the leftover bones. You don't need to go and buy things. And I think that really isn't the purpose of a stock.
But you do need to save them.
Yes, you do. That is true. You need to save.
So you're thinking stock in advance and you're putting them in your freezer?
Or not necessarily. You know what I like to do? Every time I eat something and I have a leftover bone, and I learned this from my mother, who is obsessive about this. If she had, she would buy a chicken, and you'd have the neck and the giblets inside, and she'd save those. We'd roast the chicken, so we'd have the fresh neck, and then we'd have the carcass after we ate it. And immediately after dinner, she didn't even wait till the next day. She threw it in a pot, covered it with water, threw in whatever she had, an onion, a garlic, one bay leaf, or nothing. Just salt and pepper was enough with the chicken. And she'd set it to boil. And then while we did the dishes, while we cleaned up, this thing was going for, what, an hour at the most? She'd turn off the heat, put it in the fridge, and then the next day it was stuck. I mean, that's all you need to do. You don't need to even give it that much thought. Throw the leftovers, throw your lamb chop bone into a little pot of water. Even if you get one cup of stock, think of how good that gravy's going to be the next day.
But can you mix the bones?
Yes. Why not? I mean, anything.
So you could put a lamb chop bone in with a chicken bone,
yeah,
and come up with a.
Think of how good that would be.
What is that kind of stock called?
That would be called a sheep chicken. It would baa and cluck at the same time.
Are the ones that you find in the supermarket worthy substitutes for homemade?
You know, I used to think so. And for a while, I would always, I'd say, you know, purchased chicken stock or homemade. And, you know, I've given it up. I've actually, if I don't have homemade chicken stock or homemade vegetable stock or lamb chop stock or whatever, turkey neck stock, I'll just use water. Because I think that there's something, unless you're buying a really good brand, you know, or you're buying something that is actually homemade by someone else, but the stuff in the cans and the stuff in the box usually has some of this metallic aftertaste or just something unpleasant. I don't use them. Use water and use good vegetables or good meat or whatever soup you're making and a little extra salt and you're going to be fine. You don't need to buy canned stock.
Now, for a chicken stock, you recommend using bones that still have some meat on them.
Yes.
So, and if we don't have meat on them, then just get chicken parts, the kind that we probably are less likely to eat?
You know, I'd say go to the supermarket or the butcher and get whatever the cheapest chicken cuts are. Necks are great, and necks are underrated. You know, if you go to any butcher and ask for the necks or the feet, these are things that they don't even sell. They can't even sell for that much money. They'll give them to you for a couple of dollars. I buy a big bag of chicken feet, and usually it costs me $5 for enough to make probably 6 quarts of stock.
And you get a lot of those in Chinatown.
Yes, you can get them in Chinatown or the farmer's market too, especially if there's a poultry seller there. Ask them. I'm sure they have scraps that they'll bring in for you.
I remember hearing that old chickens and capons make for
better stock.
Stocks.
Yeah, I've
Is
heard that.
True?
You know, I've heard that, and I actually have not ever done a side-by-side the old chicken, new chicken stock. So,
well, it's hard to find old chickens.
It is hard to find old chickens, although you know who has them? Again, back to the farmer's market. The people who sell eggs often will have this little sign, you know, stewing hen, and that's and they'll sell it very inexpensively, and that is perfect for stock.
And that's the stewing hens are really the chicken layers
who have
stopped laying eggs.
Exactly.
And why is that better? Because the meat gets more flavor as things get older?
Probably. And also you don't care if it's tender or not because you're not going to necessarily eat the meat from the chicken. There are two schools of thought, by the way, about whether you should eat the meat from the chicken that you've made stock from. Some people say all of the flavor is already in the broth. Throw that meat out. It's tough. But you know what? I actually really I like it. I will save it and I will make a chicken salad out of it. I'll add enough other flavors that, you know, make up for it. So you can do it either way, but I'd say don't necessarily throw it out.
Can you use leftover sauces or juices from dishes as well?
In stock? Mm-hmm. If the flavors would work together, I'm trying to, you know what would be actually probably, I sometimes put a tomato in some of my stocks to give it color and body. So I think if you had a little leftover tomato sauce, you could throw that in there.
And in your chicken stock, you have a whole garlic head halved across the equator.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
That means you take the garlic and instead of having it, I guess sort of around its chubby side.
You cut through it.
To expose the cloves. Because what you want to do is expose all that flavor. I see some recipes that call for one or two garlic cloves. And really, one or two garlic cloves in a whole entire pot of stock. That's just not enough garlic
for
me.
Well, you do throw in whole cloves. But do you take all of that
papery stuff off? No. I just leave it. Because I do skim. Another thing about making stock is you want to cook it slowly. You don't want to boil. You want a very gentle simmer. And then you want to skim the scum is what they call it. Skim the scum from the top. Skim that layer of bubbly white foam that has the impurities in it. Just keep skimming it every time you're near the stove. And then you strain it. So you don't have to be too obsessive about things like garlic paper because, you know, as long as it doesn't look obviously dirty, as long as it's on the clean side, sometimes what I'll do is I'll take off the roots. If I think they might have soil clinging to them, I'll just cut the root off.
You don't require chopping up the carrots and the celery or the onion. Just
throw them right in, yeah. Because they're going to, you know, you're boiling it for an hour. You're simmering it for an hour. And it's going to give up its flavor. The fibers are going to soften. You don't need to expose that much of it.
My guest is Melissa Clark of the New York Times and 30-something cookbooks, the latest Cook This Now. Who's the publisher?
Hyperion.
And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook and Twitter. And we have a caller who wants to know about vegetable stocks. Allegra from the Upper West Side. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. And Melissa, I love watching your videos on the New York Times.
Oh, thank you.
They're really fun. And your conversation has actually sparked a bunch of other thoughts about places to get soup bones. Fresh Direct has fish bones available, like fish scraps.
Oh.
And Fairway, Uptown and Downtown in Manhattan have two different sort of sets of things, but Uptown you can get the feet.
Oh, that's great.
And both places they have sort of what they call chicken backs or soup chicken.
Chicken backs are perfect.
And so they have just enough meat on them.
And we're hoping that Fairway will finally be able to reopen in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, exactly. And you can get your chicken backs and your feet there. But that's interesting about the fish bones at Fresh Direct. It's called for soup.
It's like they call it like fish scraps. And it's just like it's more bone than meat.
But that means you have to join Fresh Direct? Do I have to?
No, because you can get fish bones at if your fishmonger will have them too. But fish, I mean, that's a good point about fish stock. I'm assuming Fresh Direct does this if they're calling it for stock. But, you know, there are certain fish that you don't want to use in a fish stock. You really don't want to use very assertive fish. You don't want to use oily fish like mackerel bones. And that's just going to be too pronounced for most fish stock. What you want is very mild fish. So, you know, your flounders and your red snappers and all things like that when you're making a fish stock.
Now, Allegra, you said you've had problems making vegetable stocks.
I have. And actually, your point about fish stock is well taken. So I save vegetable scraps.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the stocks of things that I don't want to consume or aren't pretty but are perfectly edible. So I stick them in a bag in the freezer, and once my freezer sort of gets full of that, I then defrost it all and make a stock out of it. Every now and then it goes wrong, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I do save, like, onion skins and, like, little snippets of, like, garlic stuff that I cut off. And I guess I had a theory that maybe it was like that hairy butt of the onion that was making it bad.
Would it make it bitter? Was it bitter? What was
bitter,
the bad?
Yeah, it was just like, oh, it's just like inedible bitterness. And, you know, I'm not the most gentle of cooks, and so every now and then, like, it will accidentally come to a boil,
that's,
and you're not supposed to.
That's,
and is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Is it you? It, okay, so the bitter, when you're extracting the flavor out of the vegetables, you want to extract certain flavors but not other flavors. Mm. And bitterness is one of the things that you don't want. If you boil it, you're more likely to, you're going to get more extraction and you're more likely to get those bitter flavors. So really, you know, another trick for keeping it gentle, and this is something which I do with when I braise something, instead of cooking the stock on top of the stove, put your oven to 325 and put it, bring it to a simmer, and then just move the whole pot to the oven. And that's going to keep it even, and then you don't have to worry about it overflowing. So try that, and then that'll probably keep it.
Okay.
Thank you. When I buy carrots and celery, mm-hmm. I usually buy it with the leaves because I know somewhere down the line I'm going to need them for a stock.
That's true. Carrots have very intensely flavored leaves, though. So do you use the whole thing, or just, I would probably just use a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, just for a little.
But what I love about stocks is that it cuts down on the amount of garbage you have to put out.
That's very true.
Because so much of that is really useful. You have your recipe, the one that you put on our show page, is a brown vegetable stock. Why is it called that?
Because I brown the vegetables before I add the water. So when you're making stock, you have two choices. You can put everything into the pot and cover it with water and bring it to a simmer, and that's going to give you a gentle, you know, very, it's going to taste like whatever it is that you are cooking. So chicken or vegetables, it's just going to taste like the essence of that. If you brown it, you're introducing another flavor, and that's caramelization because you are, you know, you're browning the sugars. And that adds complexity, it adds color, and that is good for some things and not good for others.
And don't some cooks roast everything?
Yeah,
the vegetables and the bones?
You can do that. That's a great method is you take whatever you're making stock out of, your vegetables, your bones, you know, it works really well, especially with beef. Beef bones, you put it in the oven, you get it really brown, and then you put it into your stock pot. So there are two ways to go, but it really depends on the flavor that you want and what you're going to use it for.
And you caution, for example, in a fish stock, not to use fully flavored fish.
Yeah.
Carrot leaves can be rather strong. Are there other things that we definitely should not put in a vegetable stock?
You know, you could make a stock out of everything, but you just have to know that that's...
Well, like fennel has a very strong flavor.
Oh, I love
fennel. Is that a good thing in a stock?
I think so. I mean, fennel adds sweetness, but if you don't like the flavor of fennel, then no, it's not a good thing. But there are certain things like cabbage. Okay, so if you make a cabbage stock, that's, you know, I love cabbage. I would probably like a cabbage stock, but it would be an intensely flavored thing. When you're making a stock with something you've never made a stock out of, say it's a lamb chop bone or say it's a cabbage, you know, cabbage trimmings, stop and taste it every once in a while. And when it starts to taste like good, turn it off the heat because you can overdo it. The longer you cook it, the more, like I said, the more you're extracting and you could go too far.
What about cuttings from mushrooms?
I love those. Mushrooms are terrific in stock because they just make it so meaty and intense flavored. I think any mushroom trimmings, you know, throw it in a bag, keep it, and whenever you have a stock going, just throw them right in.
Well, you seem to suggest shiitakes especially.
I do like shiitakes. You know why? Because the stems are so tough. You never want to eat a shiitake stem, so you've got all these stems, so they're so perfect for stock.
Melissa Clark is my guest. Melissa, we have lots of calls coming
in.
And I want to get to them in just a moment, but we're going to take a little break. Melissa is the columnist of the New York Times, responsible for the A Good Appetite column every Wednesday. She also is the author of a number of cookbooks. The most recent is Cook This Now. We are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page on Facebook or on Twitter. And we'll be right back with all of those things after this. We're back with Melissa Clark and your calls and questions or comments on our show page at WNYC.org. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Let's go to Richard from the Upper West Side. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hey, Melissa, question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, I read an article in the Old Gourmet magazine that recommended that you cook stock for 24 or 36 hours on a very super low flame. I do that, and I've been doing it for years, and I make a lot of stock. And I'm just wondering what you think about that process.
Well, how big is your pot?
I have a really big stock pot. It must be about 12 quarts, maybe.
Okay, and so you have that much liquid in it, right? So
use a lot of liquid.
Because I think there's, if you have enough liquid and you have a big enough pot and you have a low enough flame,
mm-hmm.
that's great. I mean, as long as you keep it bubbling. I mean, you don't want to make, if it goes below a simmer, that's a problem too, because it could breed bacteria. So you
mm-hmm.
want to make sure it's simmering.
Doesn't it also affect the taste if you just leave it on the stove? Below a simmer?
But yeah, you really want to make sure it is simmering, and you don't want it to boil, because you'll get those those bitter flavors, and also
mm-hmm.
because then you could just run, you could evaporate it all the way out. Do you have to add water as you go, or no?
No,
great.
I try to keep it just at a bare simmer, and I'll even put a lid on a little bit, crack the lid a little, and just so I get a couple of bubbles going. And no, I really never add water.
That's smart. I think that is great if you can do that. I know for me that would be a deal breaker, because then I would have to pick up the 12-quart pot and somehow
mm-hmm.
strain, or I guess you could use a ladle and strain it out. But I like to do smaller batches of faster cooking stocks
uh-huh.
because
mm-hmm.
it's just more convenient. But I think that if you do a big batch at a time, and then you have the well, then where do you put it all? Do you freeze it all?
I freeze it. I put it in big mason jars, and I stick it in my freezer.
So you have a big freezer.
I do, yeah.
See, that's the thing. I have a small freezer, so I do smaller batches. But that's a great technique, and you could actually run a restaurant that way.
I remember someone saying that she pours them into an ice tray and then puts the ice cubes
uh-huh.
into a Ziploc bag, and that actually makes it easier to store. She writes chicken on one, beef on the next, vegetable or fish.
That is, you know why that's so great? Is because sometimes I'll be making a soup, and I don't want a whole entire quart of chicken stock in my soup. It's like a vegetable soup, and I just want a little chickeny flavor in there. So it's nice to have an ice cube size, or a couple of ice cube size things of stock, or in yogurt containers, in 1-cup containers, throw them in, and then add water. And so you have some flavor, but it's not overwhelmingly chickeny or overwhelmingly
because
beefy.
If you keep stock in larger containers, then you have to defrost it want part of it.
Exactly. So I'd like to do it in smaller containers. Also for sauces, it's so convenient to have a little ice cube. If you're making a pan sauce after you've seared your steak or your chicken, you throw that in and you simmer that down with some butter, and you've got a fabulous sauce.
There is a chef at a soup kitchen who asked this question on Twitter. Says, our soup kitchen for the hungry will receive from 500 pounds of chickpeas. But anyway, 500 pounds of chickpeas on Monday. Do you have any good recipes?
500 pounds of chickpeas?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about having a big enough pot to cook all those in. I guess you'll have several pots. Let's see. I mean, one of my favorite recipes for chickpeas and this is the season for it, and we're talking about soups right now, is to do a big pot of chickpea soup. And so you soak the chickpeas overnight. And then you simmer them in a big pot of water. And you add aromatics right at the beginning, olive oil and garlic and celery. And what you're doing is you're creating a broth. You don't even need stock. The chickpeas have enough flavor, and you're adding enough oil and other things. And you come up with the richest, most wonderful soup, and it's vegetarian, and it just tastes – I think it's the most warming thing in the world. I would do that. 500 pounds, though. That's a lot of chickpea soup.
Let's take another call. This one is from Athenis in Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I was going to share the ice cube idea.
That's
I used
a good
that.
One.
I was a single guy for a long time, so I didn't need all that stock. But I also want to recommend, when making a fish stock, I go to a good local fishmonger, and I get the carcasses from usually whitefish in North
mm-hmm.
Atlantic, like a cod.
Perfect.
Or something like that, and make sure the gills are taken out, because they are the filtering system of the fish, and they will impart a bitter flavor in your stock. But I put it in cheesecloth with a garni,
mm-hmm.
and I drop it in the broth and in the water and simmer it, And this way you don't have scales and eyeballs and bones floating around. You don't have to strain it. It's very easy.
And how much do they charge you for that?
That's a great idea.
They didn't charge me anything, actually, out at Long Island. When I went to one of my favorite fishmongers out in the Hamptons, they just gave them to me.
That, well, you know, they throw them away because they're not. There isn't really that much demand.
Yeah, once they take the fillet off, they have no use for it, you know. So so sometimes you can get them free because I have a difficult time finding. So I do buy box stock when I need it, but it's hard to find good seafood stock.
Yeah,
you know,
it's virtually impossible. You know, that reminds me. Good point about the fish gills. Thank you for saying that you must cut the gills out. Another thing, shrimp shells. Shrimp shells make the most delicious stock, and you can get those most of the time. You can get them for free from the fishmonger because they take the shells off, they throw them out. I usually shell my own shrimp and I save them in a bag, of course, you know, in the freezer like we were talking about. And then you want to cook them in butter first. You want to saute them in butter. And that brings out this incredible sweet shrimpy flavor. And then you add water. You don't need anything else in that pot other than the butter, the shrimp, and the water. It's heaven.
I live in the kind of neighborhood where if they think I want all of that, those leftover things are going to throw away, they're going to charge me anyway.
Yeah, I know. You know what? It's certain stores will charge. Certain stores won't.
Arabella in Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well, the reason I'm calling is because I made the most arduous veal stock a couple of weeks ago, and it was unbelievable. And I'm a lousy cook, but I was making braised short ribs, and I had to do it, and made an enormous amount of stock. So I froze it all, and then when I defrosted it to make another batch of braised short ribs, I realized, I shouldn't have defrosted all of this. So I agonized, and I wanted to ask you, could I have refrozen? I threw it away. I didn't know what to do with it all.
Yeah, no, you know, yes, you can refreeze. But here's the trick to it. You don't want to bring it up to the whole thing up to a simmer. What I like to do is I defrost it just enough till I can kind of, it's like a slushy, you know, that sort of slushy, icy texture. Then I get in there with a spoon, and then I take out what I need, and then I will refreeze. I'll just put the rest back in. It stays cold, and it's fine.
But what if it's already been defrosted? That's what I mean. It was defrosted in the fridge for a couple of days.
That's okay, as long as you kept it cold in the fridge.
Oh.
And, I mean, as soon as you – just keep it cold, and as soon as you can. I mean, the sooner you get it back into the freezer, the longer it's going to last.
Thank you so much for your call. People have been writing in as well. Many people are asking about using pressure cookers for stock.
Yes. Okay. So the pressure cooker stock thing is it will make your stock very fast because you're cooking it under pressure. The reason, and if you have a giant pressure cooker, you can do it. But the reason I don't do it is because my pressure cooker is too small. Although I guess I could with a small batch. Yeah, pressure cookers are great. A couple of rules for pressure cooking stock is don't fill it too much. You want to leave some headspace in there always when you're cooking with a pressure cooker. Very important to leave some headspace. And, you know, another thing that concerns me with the pressure cooker is because you're cooking it under pressure, you are extracting more than you would normally extract if you're doing it on the stove. So really do be careful about what you put in there. Make sure everything in there is, you know, this is not, when you're using a pressure cooker, is not the time to be experimenting with cabbage stock. Really just use sweet things, vegetables that you know, combinations that you know taste good.
I don't have enough room in my kitchen to have a pressure cooker and all the other things.
Yeah.
Do I really need one?
For making stock? No.
Well, for anything.
You know what pressure cookers are great for? They're great for beans and grains. If you want to make, I was just talking about that chickpea soup, right? So that takes it could take anywhere from 1 to 3 hours to cook chickpeas, depending on the age of them. You can do that in 30 minutes in a pressure cooker. I love pressure cookers in bean, grain, hearty grain season. Lentil soup, 20 minutes.
I have time.
You know, if you have time, then you don't need one.
My guest is Melissa Clark. Her column, A Good Appetite, appears every Wednesday in the New York Times dining section. Her latest cookbook is Cook This Now. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We're getting a lot of really interesting comments from people. One person wonders about the leavings that smoked barbecue about them. Do they make good stock?
Anything smoked will make a delicious smoky stock. You know, think about it for baked beans. So you have the leftovers from barbecue. You have the smoke flavored stock. If you cook pinto beans in that, fabulous. You're going to get the smoky baked bean flavor. I mean, it's going to be amazing. So you really just, if you're going to use anything slightly strange, like my lamb chop bone I've been talking about, so you want to use that with maybe barley and leeks, something where the flavors are going to complement each other.
A listener wants to know about why it's always recommended that we throw in a bay leaf.
It's funny. You know, I was thinking about the bay leaf the other day. The bay leaf does add a really nice earthy flavor, I think, and a little bit aromatic. It could kill you?
Well, you can't eat a bay leaf, and they always tell you to take it out.
That's true, because you could choke on that thing. It's hollow. But it does. I think a bay leaf is one of those things that if you didn't put it in, nobody would notice. It probably adds just that slight little, you know, stock je ne sais quoi. But my bay leaves, for a while I had bay leaves in there, and I just was throwing them in everything indiscriminately until I realized that they had absolutely no flavor. They were so old. So it's important to buy new bay leaves every once in a while. If you're going to use them, make sure they're aromatic.
Now, a wonderful listener from New Orleans sent me fresh bay leaves from her garden.
Oh, fantastic. Fresh bay leaves are a whole other thing.
Yeah, and we can't get them. We only get the dried kind here.
You know, in the farmer's market, you can buy, in the spring, sometimes they'll sell bay leaf plants, little plants. And so I bought one a couple of years ago, and it lasted probably 2 years before I finally killed it. Poor thing. And that, I would just pick off a fresh bay leaf and use it, and it had a completely different flavor. It didn't have an earthy flavor. It had almost a menthol kind of minty, rich flavor. It was beautiful. But
I love it.
Yeah. If you have fresh bay leaves, I would say use them sparingly because they're intense.
Estelle from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have some lobster shells that I've been saving in my freezer.
Good for you.
With an eye toward making lobster butter, but I'm afraid of the calories. Can I make stock out of them?
You can make bisque out of them.
Yes, please make stock out of them. That is good for you for saving those lobster shells. Lobster stock, that's another thing that my mother always made. We'd have lobster for dinner, and then she would take the shells and she'd throw them right in a pot right after dinner and make lobster stock. You know what you can do with it? Aside from making lobster bisque, of course, make risotto. Oh, my goodness. With lobster stock risotto,
And the shrimp shells as well.
And the shrimp shells, too. Yeah. I'm so glad you saved those lobster shells. You could brown them also in butter, saute them in butter before you add water. That will bring out a sweetness. Or you can just throw them and cover them with water without the fat if you're worried about that, either way. But rinse them well before you put them in. You don't want if there's any of that green lobster liver, the tamale kind of tamale, how do you say that?
Tamale.
Sort of clinging to the shells. You want to get rid of that because that is bitter. So rinse them and then throw them in cover them with water.
Although tamale tastes great if you're just eating the fresh lobster.
Yeah, but if you boil it, it extracts too much. It's
Sheldon in Brooklyn asks, how much should you reduce the stock? Is there a meat bone to water ratio?
You know, there probably is an ideal one that I don't know the formula for, but I'd say that when you're going, really, you want to just taste it. People don't tell you to taste stock. In fact, I didn't even write it in my recipe. I should, because I do it automatically. When you're cooking stock, you'll see a range. It says cook it for 2 hours to 4 hours. So how do you know? Should I cook it for 2 hours? Should I cook it for 4 hours? It depends on how much it's reduced. So just taste it, and when it tastes like stock, turn off the heat.
Because you don't want it to be too intense, and you don't want it to be too thin.
If it is too intense, you can just add a little more water. So, you know, that's another thing, is that you're not going to ruin it unless you're boiling it. If you keep it at a low simmer, you're probably not going to hurt it if it keeps going. And if it gets too rich and too dark, then you would just add a little water to it.
Chris from Jersey City, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, do you clarify stock or do you advocate clarifying your stock at the end of it all? It's such a pain, but
it
looks really pretty if you do it.
Yes, that's a good question. I will do it if I'm serving a consommé or I'm serving something like a clear broth. Absolutely, you absolutely want to clarify it. It just makes such a difference. It's a beautiful presentation, but you're right. It's a huge pain.
But you don't have to do it if you're just using the stock to flavor something
No. If you're going to make any time that you're not making a perfectly clear soup, then you don't need to do it. If you're going to add anything to that soup, like for example, even when you're making a chicken soup, if you're going to add noodles or rice, that's going to cloud the stock. So you don't need a clear stock. If you're serving a bowl of perfect consommé with, say, one beautiful little truffle floating in it or something, and you want to clarify it, then yeah, obviously you should.
How do you clarify it?
There are a couple of ways to do it. I think the most popular way is the egg white way. So you've got your stock, you've strained it, you've taken all of the solids out of it, you bring it back to a low simmer, and then you take some egg whites and you whip them up. Not whipped, just kind of stir them up. And you let them, you put them in your stock and you let them very, very slowly, they'll start to solidify. And somehow they suck up all those little particles. And just simmer it for a few minutes, and then you just spoon them right off. And you will see that you spoon it off, and then you strain it again through a fine strainer, and you'll see that stock is crystal clear. It is absolutely beautiful. But, you know, again, like you said, it's a bit of work.
Pamela, you're on the air. Pamela from Manhattan.
Oh, hi. The best soup I ever had, which I've remembered for decades, was this woman when I was living in the Netherlands. Every week she made up a different soup, but she always used marrow. And whatever it was, and I don't know how, you haven't mentioned that. It wasn't just bones. It was
marrow from the bones.
And other people are saying pig's feet and oxtail bones.
Oh, yeah. Pig's feet make such great stock. But you're right about the marrow. So I think when we say beef bones, we should say beef bones with marrow. Absolutely. Because when you go to the butcher, if you ask for a soup bone, you're going to be given a marrow bone, because the marrow, anytime you have fat, you have flavor. And the marrow has so much flavor and so much richness. And even if you make your stock with the marrow, and even if you take all the fat off at the end, you still have that rich flavor. And it also gives it a beautiful velvety texture. So I think you're absolutely right about the marrow. When you make a beef stock, even if you make a chicken stock, if you want to add a little richness, get a small marrow bone from the butcher, throw it in with your chicken stock, and it'll just make it that much better.
Abby from Manhattan, who says she's a chef in a restaurant kitchen, so she has the luxury of time to always have a pot going, says she's interested to read about a very reduced bone broth that is gelatinous and shelf-stable. That is, you don't need to refrigerate it. Have you heard of it?
Oh, God, no, but that's... I think that makes a lot of sense. You want the gelatinous thing if you are using really good bones, then what you're doing is you're simmering your stock for long enough, you're going to dissolve the gelatin in the bones, right? And so you just let it keep going, and that's how you're going to get a gelée. That's how you're going to get an aspic. So I can imagine it being shelf stable if you just cooked it long enough. I've never heard of it, though, but that's a great...
There was a restaurant in Brooklyn called the Chef's Table. Oh, this, you said Chef's...
Shelf stable. Oh, okay. Shelf stable. I think that, gosh, if that would be so handy, wouldn't it? You wouldn't have to dig out some freezer space.
Just one more thing, a compliment to you. A caller says that she hasn't bought commercial mayonnaise since she read your recipe, and she wants to thank you.
I'm so happy to hear that. See, I want all of you to make your own mayonnaise and make your own stock.
Melissa Clark writes a Good Appetite column each Wednesday in the New York Times. What do you have coming up next Wednesday?
Oh, well, you know, the Super Bowl is coming up. So I have a recipe for short rib chili nachos, which is uber nachos. They are the best nachos. And the short rib chili is so good that even if you don't make nachos, you should just make this recipe for chili.
And you'll find a lot of her cookbooks at the bookstore. The most recent one is called Cook This Now, from Hyperion. Thank you so much for being with us again. By the way, we'll be seeing you right before Valentine's Day to talk about romantic food.
And aphrodisiacs.